Welcome to the Endurance Town USA Project. This podcast, along with our blogs and adventure team, travel around the world creating and sharing the stories of humans changing lives through endurance sports. Today, we're introducing a new mini-series, Endurance is a State of Mind, featuring the stories of six beautiful humans who use endurance sports and mindset training to live to their potential. We explore their why and gather golden nuggets of inspiration and tactics for how to build your own best body and mind. This is Endurance Town USA.
Bring it back. Okay. Good morning. Samantha Pruitt from Endurance Town USA here with the legend Sally Edwards, and also a big mentor of mine in the triathlon and coaching space. And I've waited a long time for this interview, Sally. So cool. We met many years ago when I first got involved in the sport of endurance and specifically triathlon. So welcome to the Endurance Town USA podcast. How the heck are you?
I'm doing okay. You know, there's it's a tough time in for many people right now, and it would not be appropriate not to acknowledge, you know, the state of affairs of the world and how difficult it is to navigate these waters and find ultimately what I think is our purpose here, which is to find happiness.
Yes, I agree 100%. It's been a very challenging couple of years for the globe. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to be in a place where it's a global collective experience and not isolated, you know, in our communities or just even in our country for that matter, or states or regions. So yeah, it's a very different experience. And I know that you are a global human. I'm also a global human. We think about what's happening in other parts of the world. So we're going to dig into that. Today's theme for our show is endurance is a state of mind. And so we're going to talk about what that means to you and have a really interesting conversation about it in the second half. First, however, I want to actually have you express, who are you in the world? Where did you grow up? Where were you born? And tell us a little bit about your upbringing.
Well, I think that's a good question, because I think that gives a foundation for the conversation. Is if you know where do people come from? You know, I'm to get to where I am today, a 74-year-old white binary woman, and is the beginning of that conversation. I now live in Southern Oregon, although my business is in Sacramento, California. But I was born the post World War II, so 1947. My dad came back from the war, and my mother started immediately having children, and there are four of us. I have three older brothers, and I was gifted with the athletic talent, and they're good. when they listen to this, they might say, well, wait a minute, I was an athlete. It's a big part of being an athlete is your DNA. And I want to always thank both my brothers and my parents. My brothers didn't give me the DNA. They gave me the experience side,
yeah,
which is 50%. And that other 50% comes from your parents. So, you know, I was raised in a culture that's so much different than today. Women were to get married, have kids, stay at home, raise kids. I watched my mother, and if you wanted to use that as a role model, I mean, she was a Navy officer's wife that went to the country club.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
And so I ended up going to high school. And at the time I went to high school in California, my father had retired, and there was no athletic opportunities for girls at that time. And I always wanted to do sports, and very limited. There was no Title IX. There was no scholarships. There was really nothing, as we're trying to, and one of the themes of my life has been to break barriers, and barriers of how far the human body can go, all the way to barriers and gender, sexism, those kinds of things. So I graduated from high school with honors, and there were 100 kids in my class. So at that point, we were living in a little rural community outside of Sacramento, California. And I went to Berkeley, and I was raised in a very strict military, obviously, right-wing family. And you know, when you go to Berkeley, at that time, the student movement was very strong. The anti-war movement was very strong. And so there was a lot of political turmoil, and it really makes you dig in and figure out what your beliefs are.
Oh, absolutely.
Really good. I mean, I love Berkeley, but in my senior year, we were on strike most of the time because
wow.
of Park, anti-war, the women's movement, Black Power, food issues and poverty. And I was the part of the generation of John F. Kennedy who said, ask not what you can do for your country, ask what you can do. Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Mm-hmm. And there was a very strong pull in my generation to try to change the world, to make it a better place and rebel against this, you know, this strict kind of way you had to live. But it was also part of when television was, I can remember the 1950s when we got our first television. And, you know, so now we're opening up the mind and images of what is possible. And I volunteered to go to Vietnam for a year.
What?
Graduated.
Whoa.
I was finishing a master's degree in exercise physiology.
Okay.
And the American Red Cross had a program, a recreation program, and I majored in exercise science, and that's what my master's degree is in. So I volunteered for a year to go to Vietnam, and being in a war zone really changes again. So there was the background you're talking about, being this young girl being raised in this rural kind of family with a military strictness. And then there was the, you know, the Berkeley experience, and then the Vietnam experience. And then after all of that, you know, and it was a generation of rock and roll and free love and music and changing our society and our culture, you know, drugs and free love and
challenging all the norms, everything.
Yeah. And going in the streets and protesting and standing up for what you believe in. So, after that, I came out and I was said I want to travel around the world for a year. So there was the, you know, learning about all the cultures and then coming back flat broke with no money and 22, 23 years old. It was okay to be broke. And I had a Volkswagen bug. And I went for a job interview to be a PE teacher and got hired on the spot. And school started 3 days later. And all of a sudden, I'm going from kind of this... I was never a hippie at all, but this alternative way of living and traveling and hitchhiking and Eurail passes to a professional. It was like totally weird. And I taught for 3 years at high school and at the college level. I taught at Monterey Peninsula College and got discriminated against. And after all of that, and maybe Samantha, you feel like this. Do you ever feel like you're like a square and trying to fit in a round hole and just like
many times?
Yeah.
Many times.
Yeah. So I decided the best thing for me was to run my own life and my own business. And I started my first company at the age of 28 at this point called Fleet Feet.
Yep. We know that one well.
So yeah, a lot of people spend a lot of money at Fleet Feet.
Yes, they do. I was just there this weekend. That's awesome.
Yeah. And at that point, shoes, athletic shoes, there were not very many brands. There was no innovation. And it looked like nothing what you see today. And our average price of a pair of running shoes was $20.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
I know. I think the average price now might be
$120, $130. Yeah.
For good quality that really, but the technology that's been put in the research, none of that existed.
Right.
Nike didn't. This was 1976.
Okay. Now I have a question for you because you came out of this experience of really becoming a young woman in the world, right? You decided to bite off this massive thing. I think an undertaking of like heading off to Vietnam during the war is pretty radical stuff. So I don't want to underplay that. Was there anything in that experience that you witnessed or, you know, experienced yourself or your secondary travels around the world that when you came back to America, you decided to live a particular life, or you decided that you discovered a part of yourself that you didn't know existed. How was that experience for you traveling like that?
Well, that's a good question. You grow up quickly in a war zone. And once you're there, you saw that it was futile and useless, and it was going to go on and on and on. But after I'd been in country for about a month, we lived in these hooches, which were as a term that is meant a trailer. And my best friend was murdered.
Oh, my goodness.
She was murdered by an American GI, and the American GIs, many of them were, you know, there was a draft that they hated. They were in a war zone they hated. There were lots of drugs that were easily available, and people were in a lot of emotional pain. Mm-hmm. And there was a craziness about it. And so I got a 45, a pistol, and put it under my pillow. And every single night, the rest of that year that I was there, I would say as I was going to bed at night, you know, if you walk through that door and you're not supposed to be there, I'm not going to die here. So immediately I realized that the enemy for me was probably the American GI. Not that they wanted to go crazy in Vietnam, but that was
they were in a bad way.
Yeah, it was very dangerous to be there. And so I was really, our mission was a recreation mission, and it was to bring some kind of relief and joy to the American GI. And we did our best.
Yeah.
In a bad situation.
You left there, though, and you still decided to travel around the world. So you were still hungry for more growth.
Yes, I was. And my boyfriend at the time wanted to meet in Europe, and he was getting out of the military. And so we met in Europe, and, you know, we did the classic thing. Mm-hmm. We bought a Volkswagen bus and went to North Africa. And
oh, cool.
You know, there's a lot of stuff like hash and things in North Africa. And then we traveled all over Europe and bought a motorcycle, and it was freewheeling time of, you know, living life at that time, what I thought was to the fullest, and spending all your money and coming back to the United States broke.
Yeah. Well, part of it's the age, and part of it is, you know, we were at war, and there was this spirit around, you know, today could be your last day, and you need to live everything, you know, squeeze every moment of life out of, you know, the day, basically. Yeah. You came back to America, though, and you decided to take a, you know, structured traditional job in teaching, physical education. You got in there, and you weren't a good fit for that, huh?
I've had some of my students.
I have to be self-employed too, so I totally get I get it.
Some of my students have come back and said, and it's really nice. And I'm, you know, it's been 5 decades since then. I'm working with kids again, which we'll get to, but, working with students and young people has just been it's been wonderful. It really warms the heart because you can make a difference there. And that's been a big theme of my life. And I suspect yours too is, and that's why you're doing this podcast in Endurance Town, is to kind of share what you've learned with others. And I've been able to do that and we're constantly going to learn. We're constantly going to change. We're constantly.
God, I hope so. Isn't that the point of it all?
Oh yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like if we're not still learning and growing, that's called dying. Yeah. So let's not be doing that. Let's be always evolving. And you know, you're one of these legendary, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, not only in the endurance sports space, but in the female leadership space. I mean, from a young female all the way up till this moment in your life and continuing forward, you've always been breaking down that barrier in so many ways beyond sport. At some point you did find endurance sports. So how did you decide to open a running store? That must've been because you were running or you were a runner.
Yes, running was much different back in that era. We would do running to get in better shape to do other sports. It was just the beginning of understanding training. And I wrote one of the very first books. I've written a couple dozen books now. And
25 books, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. We won't make people suffer through all of that.
Google that. There's tons of resources there.
Yeah. But when I was writing in the 1980s, I was writing about how we get in shape, because there really wasn't much information about, you know, principles of training, which some of them don't, turns out not to be true. And how to use exercise for weight loss, for so many different emotional fitness that we're going to talk about. And I was an early, early advocate of using data, in particular heart rate data, because that's all we had. Before we had heart rate monitors, all we had was a watch, you know, to measure things. And so I started deep diving into that and writing and sharing, and then applying it to myself. So asking the question, if you can run a mile, can you run 5 miles? Can you run 10? Can you run marathons? Can you run ultras? You know, how far can the human body go? And, you know, post my generation, body keeps going further. So
yeah. Hey, but you were one of the first females, at least as far as I know, in adventure racing, in ultra endurance. I mean, you've run Western States, and you've done the Ram, and you've done Eco Challenge. I mean, this is like complete next level badassery, even today in this moment. And you were doing it many, many years ago, and you were training yourself and possibly even your peers.
Yes. And mine was self-discovery, because there wasn't
trial and error.
You write the first book on triathlons, and you write the first book on, training using data and heart rate monitors, and writing the first about so many different things, you know, zone training. I mean, I created zone training, and it's now pretty standard to use that methodology and creating just, you know, my N equals one. It was just me and my friends, and saying, hey, why don't we try this? You know, why don't we try the 80-20 principle? Why don't we try, you know, over distance? Why don't we try not training very much?
Yeah. Try all the things. See what happens.
Yeah. And interval training was becoming popular. So how much of that, and when do you apply it? And that whole concept of training load, and how do we measure training load? So I read scientific journals, and then I was out doing some of the hardest races in the world. And when you put the science and the experience together, I was very successful at it.
Yeah, of course, because you were, first of all, hungry, insatiable, really, for the knowledge, the passion, and you were firsthand willing to do the work to discover what was true, you know, for yourself and peers, and then being willing, the next level, to educate others, write the books, speak, talk, coach, do all the things that you've done with your life moving forward. So not just taking a running store, you know, I mean, at some point you moved out of that into, you know, a different broader career with Heart Zones and all of that kind of stuff. When did you launch Heart Zones, actually?
So I started Fleet Feet in 1976, and I grew it to a $20 million company, and we had 40 locations. Thank you. But
that
was, you know, late 1980s, early 1990s dollar bills, which that has changed too.
Yep.
And then I when I sold the company, and I did it as a quiet internal sale, because I can look down the road and I can open more franchises and I can grow Fleet Feet, or I was really interested in something else at that time. And I think that we do go through different phases in our life. And so I was ready for that next phase. So I was, being a young person, being a school teacher, being an entrepreneur. And I want to, yes, I was breaking barriers of how far, how fast, how strong. And, you know, I was the fourth woman to finish an Ironman triathlon of any kind of iron, you know, in Hawaii. When I won the Western States, I was like the fifth woman to cross the finish line at running 100 miles in Santa. And each one of those times I was setting records. So it was like, can I go faster? Can I go harder? And then I was reaching my late 40s, and I started Heart Zones, which is my current company.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's Heart Zones was kind of initially a lifestyle business where I would write and speak. And during that time, I was under contract with Danskin.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's when we met.
Yes.
Gosh, is that 20 years ago?
It was, yeah, probably.
Sure. Yep.
So tell me, which Danskin did you do and what year and what happened?
I'm California based, so I coached a women's team out of the Central Coast area, and we went to LA. And then I went to a couple other races too. I think we had one up in Sacramento or Northern California. I feel like San Dimas was a thing. There was a series of them that we did it for a couple years under you. We did the Disney. Remember the Disney thing? We're like swimming in the lagoon or whatever. Hilarious.
Yeah.
But it was an incredibly rewarding time. And it's shocking to think at that moment there were very few women in triathlon or endurance sports, even in running. It was just starting, the whole thing. And here you were, you know, leading the charge. And here were people like me wanting to be part of that movement and willing to be coaches and step up to help, you know, build these communities. And look at what has transpired in 20 years. I mean, it's mind boggling. And I'm super stoked, you know, that we became friends and you became a mentor of mine. And what has happened is just so rewarding, is it not?
Yeah, well, when Danskin started, Danskin is an all-women's triathlon series and grew to be the largest triathlon series of any kind in the world at its peak. And then I, at some point later, 21 years later, Ironman bought it and took a gun and shot it and killed it. And
yep.
It's really a sad. We built this fabulous women's party. And
yeah, it was fantastic. From you know, inception, where the female athlete became brave enough to even sign up to join the training program and the community, all the way through the race experience, which this was life-changing for women. Life-changing. It still is life-changing when they do that and they commit to that self-investment, I call it, you know.
I think that take you into coaching? Was that your...
I was a personal trainer at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had had my own kind of trajectory into discovering late in life, you know, I was almost 30, what the heck endurance sports were and fitness and healthy lifestyle and all that jazz. So I was a personal trainer doing all that. And I did have women's groups and things that I, you know, trained women specifically, because that was kind of my niche. You know, I was a then 30 plus female in the space and discovering endurance sports. So that was my first, I would say, training program with endurance sports before I moved into running and other things and all the way up to Ironman and now ultras and all the shenanigans that we get up to. But it was people like you where I would witness and learn about and, you know, be inspired by that showed me what was possible. Yeah. And we've talked about this. If you can't see... If you're a young person or any age for that matter, you can't see what is possible. Now I'm 52. I want to show what's possible for the 50 plus females in the world and even 50 plus humans, frankly.
Yeah.
We're not old. Everything is still possible. I'm just starting to figure this out. I mean, it takes a long time to actually get halfway decent at these things. Hey, I want to ask you about whether it's Western States, Eco Challenge, some of these just really incredible events you've done, Ironman. When you were on that journey as an athlete, discovering those experiences and what is possible for yourself physically and mentally, was there a highlight experience where it really was transformational, or would you say it's the accumulative effect of all of that?
The latter is correct. I can remember I was racing at an Ironman in Japan, and I don't know if you've had these dreams, but when you do Ironmans, you tend to do this mathematical equation, swim plus transition plus bike plus T2 plus.
Yeah.
And I always had this, I'd crossed the finish line in 10 hours and 42 minutes. I was always on.
Wow.
I know, but I'd never done it. Uh-huh. And when I crossed that finish line in Japan and it said 10 hours and 42 minutes, I was joyous, and we walked and we ran through into this 15th century castle, and there was a moat, and you'd run across the moat, and right in the middle of this castle was a baseball diamond.
What?
Crazy about baseball.
Okay.
And the finish line was home plate. And across the finish line, and this newscaster came by and said, you know, tell me what just happened. And you're asking for a transformational event.
Yeah.
And I said, well, there was this experience out on the course, and they would get it was just for 100 miles, it was lined with people. And the Japanese are crazy about this Ironman.
Yeah.
And they would yell Fido at me, Fido.
What's that mean?
And I have a couple puppy dogs. And so I thought, you know, maybe my hair is all wet, you know, looking tired, and you look like a dog. And I said, what does Fido mean? And she said, Fido means to fight.
Ooh.
Japanese word to fight.
Yes.
And, you know, I've been in a war, and
yeah,
you know, I've been fighting the you know, women's equality and equanimity and fights forever. And she saw that I was kind of, you know, the fighting thing. And she goes, oh, no. In Japan, to fight, Fido means to go inside yourself and do your best.
Oh, I love that. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Because when you go inside yourself, a lot of times you hear a lot of negativity. I'm not good enough. I'm not fast enough. I'm not pretty enough. It's particularly for women. I mean, we get a lot of negative mm-hmm. body images and, you know, glass ceilings and things. And
yes.
That's a little bit why I'm a rebel, is that, you know, that's just bullshit. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. And so I use this concept Fido to fight against all of the negativity and energy that tries to bring us to be not who we are or less than what we can be.
It's like when you were in that race and they were calling that out to you from the sidelines, they were like reprogramming your whole brain and spirit around that. How powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think in life, that's all we can ask, is to do our best.
Absolutely.
We need to do the right thing. Not that politics in this country are demonstrating that.
Nope.
But we need to do the right thing. We need to have moral character. The lack of the integrity and standing up for what's right is recently, and I don't know if it's generational or the me generation, or, you know, we need to take care of each other. That's why we're on this planet.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to dig into that, because you and I care deeply about, you know, I call it emotional fitness. We're on the same page about all of that. And we're going to talk to our human beings in a moment about how to best find and develop that within themselves. First, I want to ask you a couple quick questions. So tell us about Heart Zones. Because you created this company, I know that it's technology-based, it's heart rate zone training specifically, you have an app. What's going on with Heart Zones these days? You're still the leader, and of course, you were the founder and CEO.
Yes, I own and started from scratch Heart Zones, and I like that. I like to take an idea, develop it, figure out a way to beg, borrow, and steal, and get enough money together and launch it, and so I created a methodology, and I patented it, called threshold training. And there's some charts you can see up behind me that yep. kind of explain that. But threshold training is a way to take data and put it into zones so that all of a sudden it means something. And then I took that. It could be similar to like a Weight Watchers program, which has a methodology, and then books and programs, and I started to tell everybody I could buy, get a heart rate monitor. And they were really expensive. They were like $450 at the time. And they're more expensive now, but that's where you started.
Yeah.
And then the price has dropped and gone around. And now, thank heaven, Apple added it. Now everybody's adding. Heart rate is the key to the body's ability to talk to you and tell you what's going on.
Feedback.
And yeah, exactly. It's biofeedback, and it's numbers, but numbers can be put into blue, yellow, and red zones. And numbers can do different levels of effort. So heart rate's measuring how hard am I going. So I decided to build a heart rate company, and I didn't want to be in the business of of the manufacturing of heart rate monitors. And I wanted to be in the education and training, which has been the DNA of myself and what my interests are. And then sure enough, after we started doing certification for personal trainers and indoor cycling instructors and weight loss programs and after school programs for kids, and I would write programs, big thick books with lessons and lesson plans, and school physical education was a really big emphasis of what I wanted, but schools didn't have any money at that time. Now they have a lot. And so I started Heart Zones as that company. And then meanwhile, some engineers came to me and said, I want to take your ideas. I want to put it into software.
Okay.
And they said, you can really make a difference. Because my motto is, let's get America fit. Mm-hmm. So how do we motivate, engage people to get fit and healthy? And I wish it didn't take COVID to kind of be a wake-up call that the fit and healthy do better than the unfit and unhealthy. And it doesn't have anything to do with how much you weigh. Heart Zones has everything to do with, you're an individual, you have your own likes. Doesn't matter if you like to dance or play volleyball. There, you need to train and be in shape. And I call it 365 fit. 365 fit. And Samantha, you are such a good example. I bet you that 365 days a year, I could pick up a phone and say, hey, let's go inline skate 20 miles. Or do you paddleboard? I mean, these are not things that these are activities that I do. They're not my primary, but I'm 365. You can almost call me and say, Sally, let's go kayak, you know, wherever. And I say, sure, I'm 365 fit. I can go do that.
Exactly. That has always been a goal of mine, especially as I age, the diversity of what I do is becoming more and more important because of mobility and all the other factors of fitness. But I always have said that too, that I want to be fit enough every day of the week. So if somebody calls me, some friend or whoever, even somebody I've never met in my life, and I do this quite often, invites me to do some ridiculous thing that is a physical feat of sorts, I say yes. And then I worry about the details after that, because right. I know I am fit enough mentally and physically to go do the thing. And then I just simply adjust my training and learn the skills to do whatever the thing is. That's right. Called living a big life for me personally. So I love that. It's called 365.
Yeah. 365 fit any day. Okay. Any day, anytime,
yes.
Forward, anywhere. And when I was working as a professional athlete for Danskin, I volunteered to finish last in every single race.
I remember that.
I call it from first to worst, because typically the last person is worst. And uh-huh. I finished 125 races dead last. Mm-hmm. And it was the best place to be in a race.
Yeah.
And no one wants to finish last. So if someone will raise their hand and say, I volunteer, you know, I in my competitive years, I was one of the best in the world, and now I'm the worst. And I'll never forget the first time that I finished last. I'd never finished last at anything in my entire life. And I was challenged. Can I even do that, Samantha? Could you even finish? And I held that woman's hand, and she was shaking, and she was whiter than she was tall, and she was covered with sweat, and she breaks out into tears. And she said, Sally, inside me, there was a young girl who played basketball, and I just found her.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes.
And that's what being fit, becoming an athlete can mean, is you go deep inside yourself and you find that is inside, that we're born with that. And our culture somehow does a really good job, you know, or having experience. I hated my PE teacher. I had body images. I was the wrong size and shape. And we get this about ourselves. And when you cross a finish line of a race, no matter where you are, last place, where it is, there is this feeling of satisfaction and accomplishment you can't get anywhere else in your life.
I totally agree. I believe it's a process of self-discovery, you know, and you start with making a commitment to yourself to do a thing, set a goal, set a goal, and then do what it takes to achieve that goal, which means, by the way, getting to the starting line.
Right.
Because so much you don't control from the start to the finish. It's endless. Like, you have very little, you can only do what you can do is keep moving forward. Right. So however you come across the finish line, you are a different human being. And people might discover an old sense of self, like this female who re-identified with a young basketball player when she probably felt, you know, at the peak of her life. But now she knows that she can feel that way again. And for some people, they never had that upbringing and sport and things, like I did not. So it was a constant discovery. And I think for a lot of females, that is definitely the case, depending on their age in particular, that maybe they never had an opportunity to be in sport, to explore sport and explore their physical body in a way that was active like that, and to really challenge themselves, and then to move through the process and see what they're capable of. And we don't even know what we're capable of yet. We're still finding out.
It's fun. And
so cool.
You recently did a big race in Australia. I'd love to hear more about it, but I bet you that discovery after hundreds of races that you finished,
yes.
Each time there are these pearls, this wisdom that you gain, and it adds layers of confidence. And I know in business, I use that. I say to myself, this is really hard in business. I'm really got to get this one right. But, you know, I've run 100 miles. If I can run 100 miles, I can get through this.
Yeah, yeah. And parenting or relationships.
Yeah, really.
Sometimes it's, you know, finances break down. Like in this COVID environment, a lot of people's finances and their lives are being upended and rebuilt. And there's so many things that are relevant to the human experience, where if you utilize sport and challenge and fitness and, you know, really exploring yourself in a physical and mental way, you build this level of resiliency that is adaptable to every single aspect of who you are as a human being. And so let's talk about that for a minute. Like, how are you feeling about this global pandemic and everything that we're still experiencing, honestly, but how are you feeling about it in terms of the work that you do and what's your role here?
So I now express myself through Heart Zones, and in that effort, we offer what we call the three pillars, which is training and education, programs and activities, and technology that all wrap together. And I, along with a team, it's not me, it's like, it takes a lot of people to make this happen.
Yeah.
Really good engineers, really good sales and marketing, really good. We have created a product that is fortunately the best of its kind for school physical education. Okay. So if you go back, listeners, to when you were in PE, and in PE, the kids that were genetically gifted and, you know, athletic always got an A. And if you were in the back of the pack, you know, you hated PE and you didn't want to dress and all that kind of thing. And so the product we've created for physical education, but it works for coaching and after school activities, because we want kids to be active all through the day.
Yeah.
When they walk through the door of that school, we want them to have activities and things that are movement oriented, that are physical and expressing our physical self, not just our head. And that's called the Heart Zones Move. And so now in PE, we individualize and personalize it. So everybody's different. You're not competing. You're not being compared with anybody else. You put on a sensor. You're given a goal for the day. You're going to burn so many calories. You're going to take so many steps. You're going to spend time in that yellow zone that's behind me, which is this fabulous golden zone where you're going to lose weight and be able to do it for a long period of time. It's called moderate intensity. It's wonderful. Moderate. And it's been this hit, and high intensity has been in the last 5 years so popularized, when what we should popularize is long endurance, moderate all the time, move.
Sustainability, people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that high, hot, hard red zone that I, you know, as a professional athlete, I spent a lot of time, you know, loving it. It is all part of the zone training methodology that I created in PAC. So we're currently in 2,000 schools in America.
Wow.
Company is just, Hard Zones is just going like this. And I'm not happy about it because we're doing so well financially. I'm really happy because we're changing. We've raised the bar on what a physical education teacher and coach should be, should do, and how to teach. And I can remember I went to a school and I was demoing our technology in the state of Washington, and we're in 10 countries now, and it's doing well. And the PE teacher said, you know, I only have 2 minutes to explain. These kids have never worn a heart rate monitor and they've never seen a big display on the wall. And he said, what do we tell them? And I said, it's really simple. Make it light up yellow. That's all they have to do.
There you go.
And fourth graders came in and say, what color are you on the board? So there's a tile and there's 50 kids and they would put it on and they'd all be blue. Well, blue is this low intensity, you know, yeah, you're blue. So you'd say to a 8 or 9 year old, what do you have to do? And they'd say, oh, I got to go harder.
Yeah. I got to move.
Yeah. Now they're like going crazy. And then what happens when it turns red? Oh, I've got to go slower. And I've got to calm down. And so intuitively, we know there is this, you know, wonderful place where I can do it for, I can enjoy movement. And that's really important. Enjoy movement. Do it for a long period of time. It doesn't hurt. I look forward to it. It's called physical education in schools. Yeah. And as adults, it's called endurance activities. And
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so our Heart Zones has been able to bring this methodology, these programs and books I've written and this technology, put it together and take it to a place where we really need it. The lowest class often in schools is physical education. I mean, if you have a dentist appointment, you do it during PE. If you want to skip a class and make up a class, you do. And PE should never be cut out of the curriculum. And it should be.
I feel like it has in some places. And I would even say, I know I'm a parent and I'm a grandparent now. I know that some parents write their kids out of that PE class because they go, oh, they don't need it because they play after school sports or they're on club soccer, whatever the thing is. Right. But that's not the experience in PE. Competitive sports are not the same as a PE class.
Right. And the E is for education. Yeah. And one of the things is we need to learn how we respond to the world physically.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about emotions, which is important. We're going to talk about food, which is important. But we need to really understand how our bodies work. I mean, we're living in this body.
Yeah. We only get one.
Yeah. And if you screw it up, it's really ugly.
And how to, you know, if you can't make friends with your body, which would be ultimately the goal. And I know that's a challenge for many of us. Make peace with it. For goodness sake, find some peace within your skin. Like, that is so critical. And you see now in the world, I see, you know, that self-esteem issues and body issues and bullying and all these things around people not feeling good about themselves it's an epidemic.
Yes.
We have a mental health epidemic. There's no doubt. And to me, COVID, the biggest tragedy of COVID has not only been the discovery of seeing how our physical fitness has really been impacted by this disease or lack thereof, but the mental health fallout is just unprecedented in my lifetime. And so this podcast is about endurance as a state of mind. And I want to hear from you, your thoughts on how endurance lifestyle and health and fitness lifestyle impact the brain and the emotions and what you're doing at Heart Zones to help bridge that gap.
Yes. So our technology is used in a lot of different, we call channels. So we're in healthcare. So in rehabilitation, whether it's cardiac rehab or muscular dystrophy or physical therapy, you put on a little device of some kind, I don't care whose it is, and you go out and you do activities and you do them to get the most benefit out of the least amount of time. This little device or a step tracker or a power meter, they all are providing us with this biofeedback or information or data so we can be motivated and engaged. And that's the piece that we most often are missing is, oh, I don't want to work out today, or I don't want to go do that. It's, I'm not engaged in my health or my fitness or my well-being or my emotional state, because you ride your bike to work someday and see how it changes your work day, how just in getting invigorated, getting in this blue and yellow zone, maybe a little bit of red that I love, really changes your state of mind, your state of being, your metabolic response. So your metabolic response has to do with all the calories you take into your body and how you expend them and what impact they have on your energy and your emotional state. And it is, if we could wrap it all into the best pill in the world, exercise has kind of gotten a bad. So I now start to use the word physical activity much more. We need to move. We are meant to move, and we become a sedentary society.
Yeah. And that movement, I just did a emotional fitness video on this yesterday on my Instagram channel. That movement changes your brain chemistry. Correct. It literally changes your brain, well, your body chemistry too, but your brain chemistry, which drives how you feel, your emotions. And so sometimes you feel like crap. I mean, that's just real. I've dealt with depression, anxiety. I mean, I'm a human being just like everybody else. And when I move my body, and even when I don't want to, yesterday was one of those moments, but I was like, I feel like crap.
Yeah.
I don't really want to do anything. I just ran 250 miles a month ago. I ran 100 miler last weekend. You know, it's like, I need to take a break and recover my physical body. However, I also knew that my mental and emotional body and my heart body needed to have some movement, some blood flow, some oxygenated blood, some body chemistry. So I just went to the gym and did a very light walk around, do a few things, get the body moving, mobility. And I felt like a totally different human after 40 minutes when I walked out. It was that simple, right? You know? And so I think it's definitely undervalued and undereducated, the aspect of how physical exercise impacts your body brain connection and ultimately your emotions.
Right.
And I know you have experience with that firsthand, but how do you explain that to people who are listening who don't get that there's a connection there?
There is no easy answer on how to motivate and engage these two big words that I use a lot, people that are sedentary. And the behavioral scientists have looked into it, the exercise scientists, and a lot of it has to do with this word called habit. Yep. We get into routines and habits and ways of living. And, you know, when I did 150 dance game triathlons, one of the things I would say almost every time on stage is, if your friends aren't helping you, ditch them.
Yeah. How much your friend, peer group, community, environment affects your habits and motivation.
Right.
Huge.
You're right. And engage with people that want to support your being emotionally and physically and socially healthy.
Yeah.
And get rid of all the, and it's hard because we end up, people get attracted to us or we get attracted to them, and they dynamite our good intentions. And I think most people wake up in the morning and they're going to figure out their day and they're going to say, oh, I'm going to do good things for myself today. And then something gets in the way and this happens or that happens. And you know, I encourage people to, you know, start your day off with a healthy and fitness life, whether you're meditating or yoga, or you're going to ride your indoor bike if you have one, or your outdoor bike, go start your day that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And in starting your day that way and making it known to those who love you and support you and who are in your community and work environments and so forth, you will start to attract those people.
Yeah.
We're doing the same thing. Oh, you ride a bike? I ride a bike. Oh, hey, you're into swimming? Oh, you're into dancing, dog walking, you know, name the thing, whatever the thing is, you will find that the law of attraction works and those people will start gravitating towards you. And the people who don't want to support that will naturally start, you know, backing off as well. But you do have to make that first initial decision and empower yourself to decide what is best for me today, this one decision at a time, right? One moment at a time. And if it is this choice I'm about to make about movement, then I'm going to make the choice that's best for me and I'm going to do it.
Yeah. And it's hard to do.
Not impossible. We've all, you know, people have done it. Everybody has done it at some point. It's, have they stayed consistent? And then how do they start? It's very difficult at first to get started. I remember when I first started running, like I couldn't even run a mile. It was miserable. And even now to this day, I'll be honest, you know, the first 20 minutes aren't great.
Yeah.
Right. Like I got to get the body moving and I got to get my brain moving and all that kind of stuff. But then what happens? This flood of chemicals, you know, this biofeedback, all of these things start happening within your brain and your body that naturally propel you. It's like when something's in motion, it's easier to keep it in motion.
Yeah.
When something is not in motion, it's easy to keep it on the couch.
and it's chemistry too.
Totally.
Things like dopamine and, you know, we talk about the runner's high. It's true. It happens. I mean, you just, once you get comfortable, you can go a long, long way and really enjoy it. And the science shows if you want to live a healthy and fit life, it's a requirement. You can't dodge that.
Yeah. So I have a couple questions still before we wrap up. I want to know how people can get involved in your programs. Let's say I am an athlete or a coach or an educator. How can I get involved with Heart Zones and get on board with what you're doing?
The starting point is for us is to go to our website and to sign up. We have a newsletter. We have a store that sells a lot of all of my books, mostly. We sell wearable devices. And it helps Heart Zones. The other way is to take a program, or we have a list of all of our certified trainers. And I'm a big believer in getting a coach, whether it's about your finances or your food or your fitness. Joining a team, joining a club, joining is the magic word here, forming a neighborhood group, walking the kids to school in the morning, volunteering to participate in something. I mean, that in the world of Heart Zones, that's kind of where you begin. And in our world, you need a device, a wearable device. We have them for $50 and we have them for $500. So depending on what your level of interest is, and start learning about yourself. And you can read, you can participate, you can watch Endurance Town and listen to your regular podcast. And get engaged in finding role models and the right communication. And I say the right communication and doing it right. There's a lot of junk out there, like lose 15 pounds in 2 days and, you know, go on this diet and it'll change your life. And, you know, fake promises and false information and quote, based on science, and that you're going to, one of them is a health club chain that drives me crazy. And they allege you're going to lose a workout in the orange zone for 12 minutes and you'll lose weight for the next day and a half. Wait, you don't, that's not true. You don't lose weight for a day and a half for 12 minutes. So, you know, you have to really find trusted resources and information.
What I love about Heart Zones, and I've always loved, is it's incredibly simple. Also, the technology is not overwhelming. A lot of people I know, and I know a lot of endurance athletes and triathletes and ultra runners and all the things, are over the complexity of the technology and don't understand how to read the things and all the craziness, right? So your methodologies are incredibly simple, and it's very easy and manageable. And then also from an educator's perspective, I think if you are in education, you should be irrelevant of what you're teaching, the subject matter, you should care about the health of your students and yourself as a role model for that. And I think the programs that you have from the educational space perspective is like next level. I've never seen anything like it. So we definitely need to keep that fire going now more than ever. And then I'd love to hear from you on my last question, which is always, Sally Edwards, what does endurance mean to you personally?
Well, endurance can mean a lot of things, but on a personal level, it means my ability to sustain a viable lifestyle. Mm. And I'm 74 years old, and I'd like to live into my 90s. I don't think after 90s looks particularly good from the people, even the people I know that are really, really fit. So every day is precious. And what can we do with that precious day that we have? And that's to get stronger and fitter every day, and smarter and healthier. I mean, lots of those things. But in my world, how can I constantly challenge myself to be a better human being? And a stronger human being and a more caring human being. That's that emotional side coming out. And you have a huge huge, not volume, but ability to express your emotions and to show them and to share with others, which is what this podcast in large part is all about. Is you want to get some of the world's smartest experts that are walking their talk. And I think that's really important. You have to be true to yourself, and you are an athlete, every single person on. And it's
everyone,
hard.
Everyone.
It's hard for people to hear that. I am not an athlete. Yes, you are. Just go inside yourself and find her.
Yeah. Well, what you said is exactly, like the theme of this program, that endurance is a state of mind. It's how you perceive yourself in the world and how you define an endurance lifestyle, a fitness lifestyle that is well-rounded as a human being, is really what has changed millions of lives at this point. And you just keep going. You're like the Ever-Ready Bunny.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it so much.
There is a really good expression, which is don't let the old woman in. As soon as she starts to come at you, that old woman, because I'm kind of the beginning at 74, the beginning of middle age. You just say you're not allowed here. You know, I'm not getting old. I'm going to have fun and just live a state of mind. It is a state of mind.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, it was such a pleasure to connect with you again. Do a deeper dive for our audience so they can get to know you as well and see how fantastic you are. And I hope that people do really follow up and consider all the things that we've discussed today in terms of what is possible for them and the resources that are out there. And I can't wait to see what you're up to next.
Okay. Stay in touch.
Stay in touch. Totally. Thank you, Sally. I'm going to stop recording.
Thank you for connecting with us for this episode of the Endurance Town USA Project. Discover more about today's guest, along with other great stories and video projects, by visiting us online at endurancetownusa.com. You can also follow us for updates and behind-the-scenes peeks at future episodes on Instagram at endurancetownusa. You can also connect with our creator, host, and life leadership and business coach, Samantha Pruitt, at samanthapruitt.com or on Instagram at thesamanthapruitt. And lastly, you can follow me, Travis Ford, producer and marketing creative, at rockharbormarketing.com or Instagram at rockharbormarketing. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time we go on an adventure to Endurance Town, USA.
Bring it back.